Miracle, Anatole France. An enjoyable squib from Anatole France, 1844 to 1924. Winner of the 1921 Nobel Prize for Literature and lifelong foe of French clericalism, whose true name was Jacques Anatole François Thibault. It's nice to know that the title of the book from which this is taken was Le Jardin d'Epicure, or The Garden of Epicurus. A respectful nod to one of the Greek founders of skepticism. We should not say there are no miracles, because none has ever been proved. This always leaves it open to the orthodox to appeal to a more complete state of knowledge. The truth is, no miracle can, from the nature of things, be stated as an established fact. To do so will always involve drawing a premature conclusion. A deeply rooted instinct tells us that whatever nature embraces in her bosom is comfortable to her laws, either known or occult. But, even supposing he could silence this presentiment of his, a man will never be in a position to say, such and such a fact is outside the limits of nature. Our researches will never carry us as far as that. Moreover, if it is of the essence of miracle to elude scientific investigation, every dogma attesting it invokes an intangible witness that is bound to evade our grasp to the end of time. This notion of miracles belongs to the infancy of the mind, and cannot continue when once the human intellect has begun to frame a systematic picture of the universe. The wise Greeks could not tolerate the idea. Hippocrates said, speaking of epilepsy, "This malady is called divine, but all diseases are divine, and all alike come from the gods." There he spoke as a natural philosopher. Human reason is less assured of itself nowadays. What annoys me above all is when people say, "We do not believe in miracles because no miracle is proved." Happening to be at Lourdes in August, I paid a visit to the grotto where innumerable crutches were hung up in token of a cure. My companion pointed to these trophies of the sick room and hospital ward and whispered in my ear, "One wooden leg would be more to the point." It was the word of a man of sense, but speaking philosophically, the wooden leg would be no whit more convincing than a crutch. If an observer of a genuinely scientific spirit were called upon to verify that a man's leg, after amputation, had suddenly grown again as before, whether in a miraculous pool or anywhere else, he would not cry, "Lo, a miracle!" He would say this: "An observation, so far unique, points us to a presumption that under conditions still undetermined, the tissues of a human leg have the property of reorganizing themselves, like a crab's or lobster's claws, and a lizard's tail, but much more rapidly." Here we have a fact of nature in apparent contradiction with several other facts of the like sort. The contradiction arises from our ignorance, and clearly shows that the science of animal physiology must be reconstituted, or, to speak more accurately, that it has never yet been properly constituted. It is little more than 200 years since we first had any true conception of the circulation of the blood. It is barely a century since we learned what is implied in the act of breathing. I admit it would need some boldness to speak in this strain, but the man of science should be above surprise. At the same time, let us hasten to add, none of them have ever been put to such a proof, and nothing leads us to apprehend any such prodigy. Such miraculous cures as the doctors have been able to verify to their satisfaction are all quite in accordance with physiology. So far, the tombs of the saints, the magic springs and sacred grottos, have never proved efficient except in the case of patients suffering from complaints either curable or susceptible of instantaneous relief. But were a dead man revived before our eyes, no miracle would be proved unless we knew what life is and death is. And that we shall never know. What is the definition of a miracle? We are told a breach of the laws of nature. But we do not know the laws of nature. How, then, are we to know whether a particular fact is a breach of these laws or no? But surely we know some of these laws. True. We have arrived at some idea of the correlation of things, but failing, as we do, to grasp all the natural laws, we can be sure of none, seeing they are mutually interdependent. Still, we might verify our miracle in those series of correlations we have arrived at. No, not with anything like philosophical certainty. Besides, it is precisely those series we regard as the most stable and best determined which suffer least interruption from the miraculous. Miracles never, for instance, try to interfere with the mechanism of the heavens. They never disturb the course of the celestial bodies, and never advance or retard the calculated date of an eclipse. On the contrary, their favorite field is the obscure domain of pathology as concerned with the internal organs, and above all, nervous diseases. However, we must not confound a question of fact with one of principle. In principle, the man of science is ill-qualified to verify a supernatural occurrence. Such verification presupposes a complete and final knowledge of nature, which he does not possess, and will never possess, and which no one ever did possess in this world. It is just because I would not believe our most skillful occultists as to the miraculous healing of a blind man that, a fortiori, I do not believe Matthew or Mark either, who were not occultists. A miracle is by definition unidentifiable and unknowable. The savants cannot in any case certify that a fact is in contradiction with the universal order, that is, with the unknown ordinance of the divinity. Even God could do this only by formulating a pettifogging distinction between the general manifestations and the particular manifestations of his activity, acknowledging that from time to time he gives little timid finishing touches to his work, and condescending to the humiliating admission that the cumbersome machine he has set a-going needs every hour or so to get it to jog along indifferently well, a push from its contriver's hand. Science is well fitted, on the other hand, to bring back under the data of positive knowledge facts which seem to be outside its limits. It often succeeds very happily in accounting by physical causes for phenomena that had for centuries been regarded as supernatural. Cures of spinal infections were confidently believed to have taken place at the tomb of the Deacon Paris at Saint-Médard and in other holy places. These cures have ceased to surprise, since it has become known that hysteria occasionally simulates the symptoms associated with lesions of the spinal marrow. The appearance of a new star to the mysterious personages whom the Gospels call the wise men of the East, I assume the incident to be authentic historically, was undoubtedly a miracle to the astrologers of the Middle Ages, who believed that the firmament, in which the stars were stuck like nails, was subject to no change whatever. But, whether real or supposed, the star of the Magi has lost its miraculous character for us, who know that the heavens are incessantly perturbed by the birth and death of worlds, and who, in 1866, saw a star suddenly blaze forth in the Corona Borealis, shine for a month, and then go out. It did not proclaim the Messiah. All it announced was that, at an infinitely remote distance from our Earth, an appalling conflagration was burning up a world in a few days, or rather had burnt it up long ago. For the ray that brought us the news of this disaster in the heavens had been on the road for 500 years, and possibly longer. The miracle of Bolsena is familiar to everybody, immortalized as it is in one of Raphael's stanza at the Vatican. A skeptical priest was celebrating Mass, the host, when he broke it for communion, appeared bespattered with blood. It is only within the last 10 years that the academies of science would not have been sorely puzzled to explain so strange a phenomenon. Now no one thinks of denying it, since the discovery of a microscopic fungus, the spores of which, having germinated in the meal or dough, offer the appearance of clotted blood. The naturalist who first found it, rightly thinking that here were the red blotches of the wafer in the Bolsena miracle, named the fungus Micrococcus prodigiosus. There will always be a fungus, a star, or a disease that human science does not know of. And for this reason, it must always behove the philosopher, in the name of the undying ignorance of man, to deny every miracle and say of the most startling wonders, the host of Bolsena, the star in the East, the cure of the paralytic and the like, Either it is not, or it is. And if it is, it is part of nature, and therefore natural.